That before giving the sermon, because I'm not giving a sermon on the subject, but I would make a few remarks about the tragedy in Connecticut, which no doubt hit us all. I didn't hear about it till later on in the day because we listened to the news early in the morning, and then everything, radio and TV's off. But it was shocking, and it reminds us of what Ezekiel said about sighing and crying for what goes on in our nation or other nations too. I was reminded of what happened, was it Norway or Scandinavia, someplace where a fellow shot, 76 people? It was some great numbers. So it happens all over the world, and it just makes us think all the more we need God's kingdom to come. And it also tells us, too, that human nature is horrible. And without some self-control for those, especially of mental problems, they're the ones that are even worse off. They'll do atrocious things. You have to be possessed. You have to give your mind over to Satan the devil to do something like that. So we look forward to the kingdom of God coming and the time where we will be able to stop those things. We can't stop them now. As much security as a school or some public place or wherever tries to keep individuals like that out, it's virtually impossible if they're going to take a gun, shoot the window out, and go into a public place. The tragedy of it all is when little kids are killed like that. If you hear of adults, that's bad enough, that's terrible, but it tears at your heart when little kids are killed like that. But I was thinking these tragedies have been going on for a long time, either accidents or individuals being killed. Christ said in Luke 13, and you might want to go there after services, where he said of the Galileans who Pilate mixed the Galileans' blood with their sacrifices, and he said, are they worse sinners than anybody else? And he said, no. And then he said, what about those 18 who died when the Tower of Siloam fell on them? He said, are they worse sinners? So we might think, well, you know, God is getting at the parents. The parents were bad. The town is bad. And the answer is no. They are not worse sinners than anybody else. He said, of course, that we all have to repent. Everybody has to repent. But there's another thing, too, that there is such a thing as a greater sin. When Pilate was talking to Jesus Christ, he said, don't you know that I have power over you to kill you if I want, basically. And Christ said, well, you know, you have no power unless it's given to you of the Father, which kind of stopped the mouth of Pilate. But it was interesting what Christ said after that, and he said, but the one who turned me in has the greater sin. Pilate was just an authority doing what he thought was right or what he should do to keep the people off his back in this case. But there is a greater sin, and when you come to murder, capital punishment, I feel even though a person is dead, you know, kills themselves in a situation like that, as I mentioned to one person, they should be taken out in public and hung. You know, his body should be there for everybody to see. We don't follow the laws of God in this nation, so people hear in fear. So we have a nation that is problematic. Also, when it comes to abortion, it's interesting. We can kill thousands and thousands and thousands of 21, 22, 23-month-old fetuses, and everybody is hardened to that. But when you have young children killed, we still have, thankfully, some natural affection in this nation. But it's a hypocritical nation when we can kill, abort all those children, and then, on the other hand, get upset, which we should do, at the killing of 5 to 10-year-olds. So anyway, we have it's kind of a mixed thing for us. You know, we sigh and we cry over what happened, but at the same time, we get angry at the nation itself and what we're doing and not following the laws of God. So just a few comments on that. We do pray, of course, most of all, God's kingdom come so we can do something about it. Because we can't right now, and not 2,000 miles away from where the act happened. In Accord is out. If you haven't gone into your computer, find In Accord. Also, I might mention that Foundation Institute's seminar that is coming up this summer. When I sent that announcement out, I put down a wrong email address for myself. It wasn't Doug Morgan's fault. It should have been Gregory Sargent without a period in between Gregory and Sargent. So I have a gregory.sargent@cogwa.org, and then I have a gregory.sargent@sbcglobal.net. So I think I'll change one of them to put the dot in, I guess. How does that sound? Did any of you notice that? I take it all back, then. I didn't need to say a thing. But if you sent anything to me and it's kicking back on you, that's why. Well, as an introduction to the sermon, and I thought, by the way, that Matt Capel did a very fine job. Didn't faint at all. Didn't even look too nervous at all. But for the introduction on this sermon, I thought I'd start by asking you the question, which one of the Ten Commandments does one of the biggest so-called Christian churches abolish, get rid of, take out completely? And you might think there's two that are really long, and that is the Fourth Commandment is one of the longest, and the Second Commandment is one of the longest. And it was because of breaking those commandments, most of all, that God took Israel into captivity. The breaking of the Sabbath, and then the second one is idolatry. That's the one that I grew up not even knowing it existed. Can you imagine? For 17 years, I did not know that the commandment concerning idolatry was even there. Because it was not in what I learned when I learned the Ten Commandments, and I had to learn it to be, at the age of 12, allowed to take communion. And it wasn't there. We divided number 10 in two, we, they. Some of you know this, I've said it before, but in your Catholic literature where they print out the Ten Commandments, they leave number two out. The Lutherans do the same thing. And yet, that's the one that we're really interested in at this time of the year. It's called the winter solstice, the time of the worship of the sun, basically. This book was given to me by Mr. Hungerloo several years ago. I had never seen it before. But it's a very interesting book and tells us a lot about why we should not be keeping Christmas or some of these other pagan holidays. So I ask the question here, what is so bad about Christmas? What is so bad about Christmas? Now, we might think that this is a no-brainer because we know that we shouldn't be keeping Christmas. We're now 40 years in the church, 30 years in the church, or 10 years, or whatever it might be, and we've proved it enough. But you know, we need to be refreshed from time to time, and also our children need some specifics. They need some details about why we shouldn't be keeping Christmas. One of the things that really convicted me when I was 16 years old, having nobody around, nobody in the church, never having kept the Sabbath day, what convicted me that we were doing, that I was doing something wrong, was when I got this little booklet about this thick on the truth about Christmas, the plain truth about Christmas. I remember reading that, and that caught my attention, and I thought, well, if I'm doing something wrong there, then what else am I doing wrong? That led me to proving in the Bible that my way of life, my way of worshiping God, was totally wrong. There's a statement in Jeremiah 10 that we're familiar with, Jeremiah 10, and when you read it, you can see how you would say that applies to a Christmas tree. Whether they were talking about a Christmas tree or not here, I don't know, but it's as close as you can get. It really is. It may be that they stripped this tree and they actually made an idol of the wood itself in Jeremiah 10, decorated it. But when you read what it says, it's about as close to a Christmas tree as possible. But as you begin here in Jeremiah 10, in verse 2 it says, "Thus says the Lord, do not learn the way of the heathen." Now, New King James is Gentiles, the word is heathen. "Do not learn the way of the heathen, It's in the King James. Then it goes on to say the customs, the traditions, and we're going to read about that a little bit more at the end of the sermon. The traditions or the customs of the people are vain, and we're going to read about something Christ said too concerning vanity, because he mentioned futile or vanity. Where did he get it? No doubt from this word. He, being the Word of God, of course, knew exactly how people should worship and what they were doing wrong. So they were cutting down a tree in the forest, taking an axe to it. They were decorating it with silver and gold, and they were fastening it with nails and a hammer. We didn't do that. When I grew up, we had a tree every single year. Probably the most depressing time of the year was Christmas time. It was a time we spent more money that we didn't have on people that we didn't like. That was just the way it was at Christmas time. I remember my mother doing that. I remember buying my brother a watch at Christmas one time, and then he didn't do something really nice to me, so I said, look, I'll take that watch back if you don't treat me nice. That was on the same day, Christmas day, and I wasn't drinking. It's just the way that we did things. But you read this and you think, well, it certainly has to do with something that God doesn't like, whether, again, the exact Christmas tree or not. Nevertheless, we can read that the Christmas tree was something that was instituted by pagans, by individuals worshiping false gods. They really did have Christmas trees. We had to get it someplace. In Revelation 2:12, and one of the reasons that I give this sermon, and I don't believe I've given one for a couple of years on Christmas, maybe two or three or four, maybe 10. After all, I've only been here 17 years, so probably haven't given more than a couple. But Revelation 2, notice, in verse 12. This is to the church in Pergamos, and you'll see here that in verse 14, I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam. So here is a church of God, individuals who hold a doctrine of Balaam, who was a prophet, like Simon Magus probably, but he had powers in the Gentile world with their Gentile pagan gods. He was the one who asked God permission to curse Israel, remember. So you have the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel. Since I can't curse them, hey, let's send these beautiful women into their camp. Taught them to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel, also to eat things sacrificed to idols. Idolatry was extant in Israel as they were in the wilderness. And to commit sexual immorality that so often took place with pagan worship. Idolatry and immorality. That was happening in the church. No doubt both, idolatry and immorality. However they taught it, I'm not sure, but they were allowing immorality, allowing marriages that were not legal, something that happened, excuse me, in 1 Corinthians 5. Going on here in verse 20, I have a few things against you, and this would be the church in Thyatira. Verse 20, because you allow that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophet, to teach and beguile my servants, this is in the church of God, to commit sexual immorality and to eat things sacrificed to idols. And now, of course, we know what Paul said. That is, if you don't know, you know, about meat, whether it's been sacrificed or not, it didn't taint the meat. But no doubt it had to do with the synagogue of Satan, where it was a worship involved with both the immorality, the worship of pagan gods, unknowingly perhaps, but still it was there. And a sacrifice of, that is, eating meat that was offered to idols. Psalm 96, I won't go there, but you know it says, the gods of the nations are idols. So we in the church worship not the idols, not the gods of this world, but we could we could start thinking, look, what is so bad about Christmas? What is so bad about a tree? It's just a tree. What is so bad about giving presents? They're just presents. It's giving. We don't want to, you know, look weird. We can follow God's ways. We can keep the holy days. And Thyatira may have been keeping the holy days, for all I know. Pergamos may have been keeping holy days and also being involved in these other things. We find the Galatians were doing that. They were no doubt keeping the Sabbath and the holy days, and they were doing things wrong. So we could say, what's wrong with it? Why can't we say Merry Christmas to people? What is wrong with that? It's no big thing. But what does God say? Is it a big thing to God? Again, we see what God said to those two churches, that they were allowing things that should not have been allowed. And we could grow up in the church and start compromising with this second commandment and allow idolatry in our homes. There was one woman, we found this out here a couple weeks ago, but here you have two sisters growing up in the church. One sister dropped out of the church back in 1994, and she realized that she missed something growing up, so she actually wrote a letter to Santa Claus. Drops out of the church and thinks, I missed out. Now, I grew up in a church that kept Christmas, Easter, Halloween, all the pagan days, and I can guarantee anyone that you're not missing out on anything. You just aren't. But people get this emotional feeling, and around Christmas, you go into any store or turn the radio on, and you hear music, it's hard to get away from it because the music is there. It's Christmas. Some of it's winter music, and there is a difference between the two, between winter music. You can listen to that. It is not Christmas music. It's winter music. It's fine. Unless it makes you want to fall down on both knees and worship Nebuchadnezzar's idol, then don't even listen to that either. But I don't think we have a problem with it. But it's emotional. It is some of the best music you can find in the year as far as emotional music. Let's face it, I like it. I really like the tune. Nothing wrong with the tune, but I know in the world tomorrow we're not going to have those tunes because it'll bring up wrong memories, association with what we did that was wrong, perhaps, if we didn't grow up in the church. So the gods of the nations are idols. They are idols. And if we start partaking of something that they're doing, then we're partaking of the worshiping of their idols. So Satan is very subtle. He's very deceitful. We moved in the association. I did bring my wife with me, unlike not taking her to Winter Family Weekend with me. I guess she's staying home. No, we're not going to Winter Family Weekend. We're going to Branson. And I was looking at my notes when Doc was saying this, and I saw Branson, and I raised my hand thinking Branson, but he didn't say that. There's actually a wedding December 22nd down in Wichita. We'll be there. When we moved into the association, I was given a call by this individual about a block down the street, and she said, "We know you're a church pastor, so we want you to play the part of Santa Claus in our association this year." May have told this story sometime back. This was a few years ago, 7 years ago. And I said, "You know those stories about Christmas and where Santa Claus came from and where the Christmas tree came from that comes out in most newspapers on Sunday morning after Christmas or the day after Christmas? Have you read about, you know, the history of Christmas?" She said, "Yes." I said, "It's correct." I said, "It's pagan." And I said, we don't keep Christmas for that reason. Oh, you know, the shock, this total shock. It is amazing. Page 77 of this book, so we're going to go into some references. So if there's any doubt in our mind at all whether Christmas is pagan, that it is the nations worshiping idols, then we'll know for sure. This again is The Winter Solstice, The Sacred Traditions of Christmas by John Matthews. Now this fellow who writes the book knows, absolutely tells us from the start that this book is about the winter solstice and how to celebrate the winter solstice. He makes no bones about it at all. And this is what's so good about the book, because he recognizes where Christmas comes from. And he wants to keep the winter solstice. He wants to worship the sun. That's why he comes out with this celebration. So I would say he's a Christian, or would you say he's not a Christian? Page 77 is quite interesting, and he makes these comments, a couple more comments as we go through here. He said, every year we take a tree, usually one from the fir family, bring it into our homes, decorate it with colored lights and sparkling ornaments. For a few brief days it becomes the center of the house. Gifts are laid beneath it. Family and friends are drawn to sit around it or beneath its boughs. Yet few remember or even care to know that the symbolism that gave rise to its place in our lives, and which in some instances predates the celebration of Christmas by hundreds of years. Now, he backs it up with facts as we go through. And what I'm going to do in this sermon, in the beginning here, or perhaps in the next 15 minutes or 20 minutes, go through proofs of where some of these things that the world does, where it comes from. So we'll go back to page 12, and we'll just hit some of the highlights here. I don't want to bore you, but you can imagine how much information there is in this book. It's about 250 pages long. So there's a lot of detail, because there are a lot of nations worshiping a lot of gods, more than one in some instances, who have been keeping December 25th for thousands of years. Goes back a very, very long way. So, page 12, it's just before sunrise on a cold December day, some 3,000 years before the coming of Christ. 3,000 years before 31 A.D. That takes you back a long time. Unless he's talking about the second coming, and I don't think he's talking about the second coming. For those crouched at the heart of the mound, it must seem as though light has been banished forever. Then, suddenly, a tiny sliver of sunlight strikes the stone slab at the back of the chamber. Slowly it widens, climbs upward, illuminating a number of mysterious carvings, circles, spirals, and zigzag patterns. For the people crouched in the center of the great mound of Brug na Bwan, also known as New Grange, and some of you have probably heard of New Grange, every symbol has meaning. But by far the greatest significance is the return of the sun itself. The light that enters the dark womb of the earth brings with it the promise of warmth and life to come. There's a story in here that I read that I won't go to, but basically it states, and this comes from the Babylon Talmud, and where they get this story I don't know, but supposedly after Adam is put out of the garden, that's in the fall, he realizes that the sun is disappearing, so he goes on an 8-day fast somewhere around December the 12th through December the 20th, and realizes that now the sun is coming back. And from that time on, Adam has an 8-day fast of hoping and praying that the sun will come back. Now, how much Adam lost, I don't know, but he certainly was not privy to the Spirit of God, the Tree of Life, and so he no doubt got off course in many things quite quickly. He sure didn't know how to raise a garden. Page 15, the solstice of the chimney. This is quite interesting. For those of us who might wonder where Santa Claus comes from, talking about this time of the year, the winter solstice, it says, at these times the coming and going of otherworldly beings, communications between the dead and the living, happen all the more easily, and there is a need to propitiate them, and to watch closely to see that things return to normal once the solstice tide has passed. This was, above all, a time of celebration of ritual acts designed to align the individuals with the cosmos. And by the way, in this book, it basically tells you that paganism involves people looking at the alignment of the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars. And once in a while I hear that people get caught up in this, and the sign of Christ's coming is going to be, guess what? The alignment of the heavens, when we know better. We know what 2 Thessalonians 2 says, that the end time is not going to come until the man of sin comes. That's what we watch for. So it goes on to say, dances were devised to enact the movement of the seasons, the fertility of land and people. The masked dancers and shamans of the Bronze Age and the Neolithic people are still reflected in the masked geysers, whose tour the outlying villages of Britain and Ireland to this day, or who tour, singular, all of these places today. These shamans, by the way, were priests, they were historians, they were scientists, they were the magicians of the day. And they were the ones that climbed the chimney. I'll show you a picture in a moment. The shamans who descended a ladder or tent pole into the smoky fires of the ancestral world. Recall a more familiar red-suited figure who descends our chimneys every year at midwinter. This is an interesting picture because it takes you back to some Indian folklore. And here you have on page 136, and guess what this is? If you can see it, it's a tent, teepee, actually, with Indians inside. A ladder going up the outside of the teepee, smoke coming out the top. Well, not in this picture, but it does if it gets cold enough. And guess what? You have a fellow with the head of a deer, it looks like, and he's climbing up with a big bag on his back. He's going to be throwing some presents down the chimney is what he's going to be doing. Indian folklore. Where does this come from? I think this picture comes from before 31 AD. Maybe after, but it certainly doesn't have a guy with a red suit on. You know that this comes from paganism. Most of the Indians were not Christians. Were any of the Indians Christians? My great-great-great-grandmother, who was a Meskwaki Indian, I don't think was a Christian, from what I understand. Yatahe. I think that's Apache, if I'm not mistaken. So we look at these things and we see that Santa Claus comes out of what? Idolatry. We go further on here, page 20. We have a lot more on that, but I'm filling you in on just some of the highlights here. Page 20, we have a section on the Old New Year. Now, the reason I bring this out is because the Israelites came out of Egypt. And you wonder what was taking place at this period of the year, that is the winter solstice period, which stems from around December the 22nd through January the 6th is when all the festivities took place. Sometimes they kept 24 days, sometimes they kept 12 days, sometimes they kept 10 days. But here it says, in ancient Egypt, at the start of the new year, a festival celebrating the return of the sun was held along the Nile Delta. As the rising waters brought agriculture to a halt, there was a time to celebrate the festival of Opet, held at Thebes and Karnak for a period of 24 days. The ceremonies began with offerings to the gods. And this god was Ammon, A-M-O-N. His consort, Mut, M-U-T, or Mute, and their son, Nonsu. Their boat-shaped shrines were carried out of the temple, followed by Pharaoh himself. They proceeded to the tributary that led into the Nile. And then they went down to Luxor. People lined the banks, it says, along the barge's route, joining in the singing, dancing, and music. Now, we know there's nothing wrong with singing. We know there's nothing wrong with dancing. We know there's nothing wrong with music. Some have even thought that the Church of God, when we go to a winter family weekend, that is actually worshiping Christmas. How many of you have heard that? That's what we're doing. Well, it's a time where everybody has off, and so we get together. And if you've been there to Winter Family Weekend, we do have a big idol sitting right in the middle of the gymnasium that everybody bows down to. Well, I'm talking, you know, stupidly, foolishly. We don't do that at all. It's a time to get together. At the feast we eat, we drink, we sing, we have a festival, so there's nothing wrong with that. It's that they were honoring their gods. They were honoring their gods. And then it goes on to say, at Luxor, the festival really got underway with banquets in honor of the gods and the reenactment of the episodes from the life of the deities this time of the year. So are we going to involve ourselves in something like that? It's not wrong to eat, it's not wrong to drink, but should we be involved with anything that has to do with the idols of the world? Okay, page 23. The giving of gifts. It says around this time, and there was a period called the Kalends, K-A-L-E-N-D-S, that was extant in France, Russia, Czech Republic, Wales, Lithuania, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. They kept this period of time, same period of time. But it says, the impulse to spend seizes everyone. This is from a 4th century writer called Libanius. The impulse to spend seizes everyone. People are not only generous themselves, but also towards their fellow men. A stream of presents pours itself out on all sides. So what we're doing is brand new. We're actually giving presents to Jesus Christ, aren't we? Or because Jesus Christ was born? And the answer is no. It's picked up from paganism. In fact, later on I may or may not have any information on when it was decided that we keep Christmas. Constantine was one who decided, one of the ones who decided when the birthday of Christ should take place, because everybody had, well, you could find some saying the birthday of Christ or the birth of Christ was in January, some say February, some say March, actually every month of the year, if you look it up. Some people will say he was born. But most center in on this period of time. The Kalends festival banishes all that is connected with toil, allows men to give themselves up to undisturbed enjoyment. And if you go into this book, you'll see some taff nudity because they gave themselves over to everything that you could think of. If you go to page 25, that's talking about, in this one, the Saturnalia, the impulse, the presence. And I won't even read about the Saturnalia. Let's skip quite a ways ahead here to page 51. And I'll bore you. You know, you're going to get tired of me reading. You will. But this way you won't forget, or you will just turn me off and forget. But think of the details that are going on here. A surprising number of gods of the ancient classical world, remember, the idols of the gods of this world are idols, is what Psalm 95 says. A surprising number of the gods of the ancient classical world share a shared nativity stories that would later influence the development of the story of the birth of Jesus Christ. Among those recorded are Tammuz, it's one, Attis or Attis, two, Apollo and Dionysus, three, Mithras, and actually Constantine was one who worshipped Mithras, Baal, that's the Palestinians. All are wonder children, every single one of them, born under extraordinary circumstances and conditions at or near the time of the winter solstice. So why do you think that time was chosen for Jesus Christ? The answer is because the nations were keeping that day and worshiping their wonder child for a millennia. That's why. Do we want to be involved in something like that? Page 52. Today we celebrate the birthday of Christ on December 25th without thinking. The world does without thinking. If you tell people, I don't celebrate Christmas, what kind of look are you going to get? Well, when I was young in the ministry, I would tell people, you know, well, what are you buying your little girl for Christmas? Nothing. We don't keep Christmas. I just don't say anything. Today I would say, well, she'll get plenty of presents. But I don't say, but not today, and not tomorrow, and not on Christmas. You just kind of, you know, they're not interested in whether or not you keep Christmas. You might say, You know, it's amazing. Christmas is pagan. Did you know that? I don't know. It depends on who you're talking to, you know. I still remember Yvette, our neighbor of a long, long time ago, so this does not need to be cut out of the recording. But our neighbor said, Greg, are you keeping Easter? Is your family coming in for Easter? And I said, no, Yvette. I said, do you know what Easter means? You know where that name comes from? No, it's a pagan sex goddess. She was French. It's like, and I said, you should look into that. I said, do you want to keep a day that worships a pagan sex goddess, Yvette? We had known her for some time, so we could get away with it. She said, oh, no. And then she thought, I'm too old to change. That's what she said. So today we celebrate the birthday of Christ on December 25th without thinking, yet it was 400 years after the birth of Jesus that the date was fixed. And so for 400 years, do you think they were keeping Christmas? They were still keeping days to their wonder children, but most people weren't. So you have, and let me just go through the names, Apollo, Mithras, the reborn god, by far the oldest of the wonder children is the Egyptian god Osiris. You think the Israelites were keeping this day when they came out of Egypt? And the answer is yeah. They were used to it. The god of pine, this is interesting because where does the pine tree come from? They claim here that it comes from this kid that was born. His mother loved him so much that he mutilated himself. And the symbol now of this kid mutilating himself is the pine tree. There's many stories that go with the pine tree. This is not the only one. But now they say that people during this period of time go out and cut a tree as a reminder of this god's act of self-mutilation. The cave and the grotto, Mabon, the son of Modron, the British Apollo marries Mabon, and it just goes on and on and on with some of these stories. Page 78. We'll give you two more. Page 78. This one is on the solstice evergreen. We can be certain that from the time of our earliest ancestors, the existence of plants that were evergreen, which did not wither and die with the onset of the long, dark days of winter, were perceived as a metaphor for the undying gods of the natural world. It says, no one can say with any real certainty when the first such tree was decorated and made the focal point of the mid-winter celebration. There may well be a connection with the celebrations of the god Attis, whose festival included the decoration of a pine tree. Kids, are you going to now, all of you three, four kids, are you going to keep Christmas? The answer is, the sermon is for all of us. We learn this from the time we are born that we shouldn't be keeping Christmas, but sometimes we don't know that much detail. Our parents tells us the details, but you can go to books, and maybe some of our parents have these books too, which is a good idea to really cement, because God is in the details. God is in the details, and He wants us to know specifically why we don't keep Christmas. So it may have been the god Attis whose festival included the pine tree. But the origins of the custom are generally seen as emerging from a combination of two traditions, which were originally quite separate. The Roman custom of decorating their houses with greenery at the time of the Calends, remember I mentioned that, of January, and the popular belief that on every Christmas Eve, certain trees, the apple most especially, would either blossom or bear fruit unseasonably. So where do we get? When I was a kid, we took these little balls, equaling an apple, according to this at least, and hung it on the tree. We hung a lot of those on the tree. How many of you hung those on trees when you were a kid? You pagans, you. I didn't know we had so many. But we were. Unknowingly, we were doing it. Finally, page 81. It says, by the beginning of the 20th century, the traditional Christmas tree was so firmly entrenched that the origins had been wholly forgotten except in the writings of a few obscure antiquarians. So people just don't know, and they don't think, and they don't care to know, as was mentioned in the beginning of the book. Deuteronomy 12, can you think of some place in the New Testament where it tells you not to have a Christmas tree? We can think of places where it says not to have idols, but if you grow up thinking, well, hey, this is not connected with, you know, anything. I mean, well, what's a tree? It can't be idolatry because I don't even bow down before that tree. Deuteronomy 12, we've been talking about the works of the law. You can't find anything in the New Testament that tells you not to have a Christmas tree. So we might excuse ourselves, but if we believe in the works of the law and in the book of the law, we might sit back and wonder. Deuteronomy chapter 12, when the Lord God, verse 29, when the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess. Now, they came out of Egypt. They had been out of Egypt for 40 years at this time. They're going into the promised land where they were worshiping, well, remember, Palestinians? Baal was one of the gods where you have the tradition going back to the winter solstice. Where they were going, worshiping Baal, Palestinians, they were not supposed to do something. Notice, the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you're not ensnared to follow them. Well, so we're not going to do that, right? End of quote, and the answer is no, there's more. After they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, who are idols, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? I will also do likewise. How did the nations serve their gods? Well, winter solstice is the way they serve their gods. Their wonder children were born at the time of the winter solstice, very close to it, perhaps shortly before or right after. How did these nations serve their gods? I will do like them. Verse 31, you shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they've done to their gods. In other words, it may start out where it's not so bad, but look how it ended. In other words, it maybe didn't end with a human sacrifice, but it ended up that way. They burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe. You shall not add to it, nor take away from it. Now, Joshua remembered this, but he was also told something by God when he came into the land. Joshua 1 and verse 8. This is not in the Ten Commandments. It says, you shall not make an idol to bow down, but it also says to serve. You shall not make an idol. But here it was very clear, don't even worship me, because people do say that. We are worshiping God and Christ with Christmas. That's what we're doing. There is nothing wrong with it. Deuteronomy 12 is definitely a book, a chapter, and a verse that we need to all memorize. Go there when it comes to Christmas. Deuteronomy 12 is probably the very best, you know, short few scriptures that we can say, hey, this is why I don't do it. But Joshua 1 and verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth. Meditate in it day and night. Deuteronomy 12, 28 was part of the book of the law. The book of the law didn't end until Deuteronomy was complete. There you find the book of the law, the book of the law of Moses, the book of the covenant. That you may observe to do according to all that is written in it, for then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success, and you'll have more money on December 26th than most people. You absolutely will. Galatians 3:10. So this is actually a sermon on Galatians. Galatians 3:10. It includes it. Because some will again take this scripture in Galatians 3 and verse 10 and say, hey, works of the law, which, as we saw some time ago, is the book of the law. Works of the law, you are under the curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. So we're cursed if we don't follow Deuteronomy 12, right? We're cursed if we don't follow it. Now there's works of the law and there's also works of the flesh. And that's described over in Galatians 5 where I won't go, but it's interesting that you take a look at the two and you see there's nothing wrong with the works of the law except that which needed replacing under the new covenant. Sacrifices needed replacing because the works of the law in and by themselves could not give people something that they needed in order to obey what God wrote. But the works of the flesh are all bad. Works of the law are good. All of them in principle and in type. So we find here in Deuteronomy 5, we go back to Deuteronomy 5, and we see what was missing. Deuteronomy chapter 5, all the commandments, then you come down to verse 28. The Lord heard the voice of your words when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, I've heard the voice of the words of this people which they've spoken to you. They are right in all that they've spoken. We will do these things, is what they said. Including the second commandment. We're not going to erase it. We won't get rid of it. As will happen later on, they may have said, if they were prophets. We're going to follow. Verse 29, oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and obey. Always keep my commandments that it might go well with them. So where was the problem? Well, you know, even when people know, they don't have the heart to do it. Like our neighbors. People who know. Most people don't know at all. But even if they knew, they don't have a heart. They don't care. There's something missing. And that actually came in the New Covenant. God said in Jeremiah, and you know the scripture, it's a 31:31. It's an easy one to remember. That the days will come when I'm going to write my laws in your heart and your mind. In a book, it doesn't do any good. Works of a law, book of a law, it doesn't do any good unless you've got the mind to keep it. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, in other words. That horse has to have a heart to drink. It could be stubborn, and just because you lead it there, it's not going to drink. It's not going to drink till it gets good and ready. Well, all mankind will be good and ready in the second resurrection because it's going to be a shock to them when they see us appear and disappear. You know, we're going to do everything we can to prove to them that the way that we lived was right. Not just not keeping these pagan days, but also doing what was mentioned in the sermonette. But we have to have a compassion and a right spirit towards the world. And I do hope all of us do sigh and cry over what happened in Connecticut. I hope none of us are hardened and say, the world deserves it. We can't have that attitude because is that Philadelphia? Is that brotherly love? And the answer is no. Now we need to have brotherly love. Otherwise God will take us through enough trials where we will have sympathy for others because maybe we're affected with some problems ourselves. So the time will come when God is going to give mankind a heart to obey. Matthew 15:9, two scriptures ending here. Matthew 15 and verse 9, short sermon, and I know you want me to keep talking. Matthew 15 and verse 9. Remember back in Jeremiah 10 where it said the ways of the nations are futile? Christ said in Matthew 15 and verse 9 the following. In vain they worship me. Now the context was not holidays, context was something other than that. We know that. But this was just one thing they were doing here where they were, was it the case where they were not going to give their mother, some mother and father, some money because they gave it to the temple? Extra offerings to the temple. It was a tradition that they had. They needed to first honor their mother and father. Help them out before they gave extra. And we've always said, don't drop money into the holiday offering when you should be supporting your family. You know, you give what you have, you support your family first. And then the extra that we have that God has given us, then we take from that. But they had a tradition, and here it says, in vain do they worship me, teaching as commandments, as a doctrine, that is, the commandments of men. So we can worship Jesus Christ in vain. And people who say, you know, I'm doing it, I'm just using this Christmas tree, buying my kids gifts at this time, I'm worshiping Jesus Christ. You might say, you know, I agree that in your mind you are. We can't disagree with that, brethren. We can't say, no, they're not worshiping Jesus Christ. They are. If in their mind they're doing that, then that is what they're doing. But it's useless. Christ is not accepting the worship. They're giving it in their mind. It's just that Christ is not accepting that worship. It is being done in vain. It is no use. No brownie points in heaven for you. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 6 through 8, finally. 1 Corinthians 10, verses 6 through 8. It's talking about the Israelites who came out of Egypt. And here in verse 6, starting here, these things became our examples when they came out, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted. We should not become idolaters. We must not become idolaters. That commandment is important. We go into tribulation if we break that commandment. We begin compromising with God's law. All we have is trials. Do not become idolaters, as were some of them, as it's written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Maybe I should have read some more about the festivities and what they did, but that's what they did. Some of them rose up about sunset. That's when they started to drink and eat and play. They slept during the day in their activities, and then they did all of their immorality, feasting, drinking, and worshiping other gods at night. And 23,000 of them died. So finally, it just says, and we have to remember now, coming back to Satan's subtlety, how he compromises, wants us to compromise with the second commandment. We have to read what it says in verse 14 and follow it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry.